We're going to turn in our Bibles to Leviticus chapter 12, and as we do, we're going to have those young people, ages 3 up through the 6th grade, you can be dismissed for junior church if you'd like. Otherwise, you're in here with me talking about bodily fluids. That should be enough motivation to run. All right. There we go. Leviticus chapter 12, 13, 14, 15. 157 verses this morning of excitement. Chapter 15 in particular has been called the scariest chapter in the Bible. And I utter a hearty amen. We're not going to read it, okay? That's going to be for you to do on your own. Go ahead and take some time, especially after we talk about it, so you can kind of, you kind of need a strategy every once in a while to know how to read something. Hopefully what we do this morning gives you a strategy for these four chapters, and that's the goal anyway. Now, I went out a couple different times this week with different people, and so if you think you know who's the actor in this story, I want to assure you that you don't. If you think that it's you, I assure you that it's not, all right? But maybe you've been there, as I was this past week. You've poured yourself a nice hot cup of coffee, or maybe it's a nice tall, refreshing glass of iced tea. You've got it sitting there on the table, and you're talking. You're enjoying some conversation and some physical refreshment. And then all of a sudden, without any warning, as you're talking, or the other person's talking, you see something launch off their lip. And then all of a sudden, you see the ripples on the liquid surface. And you know that whatever was formerly lodged on the edge of their lip now resides at the bottom of your cup. Now you're left with a decision. And it's really not a very hard decision. Do I drink it? Or do I not drink it? We understand, we get it. When it comes to that kind of a setting, what was a part of that somebody is going to become a part of me if I take that and ingest that. It's gross. Unclean. We're standing at the base of Mount Sinai, a place where the holy God has come and has been talking to his people about holiness, his and theirs. A part of this holiness is the fact that he is going to reside with them. He comes and he resides in the center of the camp in a place called the tabernacle. We know that his holiness is there because he lights it up with fire. His very presence is residing on this tent. And those who have trifled with his holiness thus far in the book of Leviticus have died. Priests, those who were commissioned to enter the tent, those who were given the service of the sacrifices, treating God as unholy, they themselves have died in defiling his holiness. There was a time in American culture where we understood this concept of clean, unclean. In fact, the passage that we look at today concerning leprosy was even used by Charles Schultz in one of his the Peanuts illustrations. We have Snoopy here, whose his hair is a little disheveled. He's wearing his clothes. They're ragged. He's followed by dirt. And he's muttering, "Unclean, unclean." We get the idea. Okay, so you're interested in what the comic is. Charlie Brown washes, gets ready for supper, pats the dog. His sister says, "No, you got to wash your hands again. You touched the dog, good grief. Stay away from me. I'm clean, I'm clean." "I'm unclean, I'm unclean. The bubonic plague, filthy, dirty, diseased." Poor Snoopy. He has a complex because he's unclean. These concepts used to be understandable to us, but the whole point of being unclean is not only undesirable, but separated, distinct. That which is clean is acceptable, that which is unclean is not acceptable, but also makes other things unclean. As we've been working through chapter 11, which talks about all the food laws, we saw that there were three emphases. There was an emphasis on life as opposed to death. What can I eat? Things that are associated with life. Don't eat things that are associated with death. Don't eat the carnivores. Don't eat the carrion eaters. Things that are associated with life, not things that are associated with death. There was an emphasis on that which is blessed, not that which is cursed. And so the ground crawlers and things that stay on their belly, like the snake that was cursed, you're not allowed to eat those. Why? Because you're people of the blessing, not people of the curse. There was an emphasis not on health benefits to this covenant community. He didn't say you can't eat these because you'll get sick. That wasn't the point. He said, I want you to not eat these things and to eat these things because of who you are. What you take in it says something about who you are, and it keeps you from fellowshipping with those who aren't what you are. The whole purpose wasn't for health benefits. It wasn't for hygiene. It was for identity. It was for holiness. There were three requirements, as we saw last week. The first requires a process of discernment. Now, God doesn't always tell what, or he doesn't always tell why, but he does tell what. Don't eat this. Don't eat this. You can eat this. But he doesn't necessarily explain why. So that requires an element of trust. Why? At the end of the day, because God said so. And again, understand where we're at in this whole unfolding of the revelation of God. We're at the training wheel stage when we're talking about holiness. We're at that place where we're just putting the wheels on the bike and we're starting to learn to ride. He's giving us that shove down the driveway and he's just about to let go. They're still at the base of the mount. They're still unveiling their constitution. How is this supposed to work? So he's getting ready to let them go, but they're needing training wheels. And so these are the training wheels. And he's not explaining why. He's just telling them what at this point. That requires that they trust their God. The same God, by the way, who brought them out of slavery in Egypt and fed them manna in the wilderness. The same God who gave them water from a rock. The same God who's met every one of their needs so far. So to trust him in the next thing should be pretty simple at this point, because they know that he cares for them. Finally, it requires an act of obedience. If, in fact, they don't obey, they themselves will be unholy. They must obey. In their relationship with God, it's not an option. Obedience is a must. As he continues through that passage in chapter 11, there's two consequences. He wants them to understand that because of the corrupting power of the unclean, they must detest what is unclean. Not just reject it. Not just say, no, thank you. But to actually have a revulsion for it. To have in their hearts the idea that it would be disgusting. It would be abominable, to borrow the King James word. They had to have a reaction toward these things, because what is unclean makes unclean. That's the whole point. God says, I want you to love what is lovely. I want you to hate what is not lovely. I want you to detest what is unclean, because if it is unclean, it will also make you unclean. And so a refusal to detest the unclean makes the person defiled and detestable to God. God cannot bring into his presence, bring into his fellowship, that which is not clean. He just can't. He can't sweep it under the carpet. He can't make it magically go away. He has to deal with the uncleanness. That's what the whole sacrificial system was for. But as he's trying to build into his people the concept of holiness, he has to give them He has to give them the same thing that we give to our kids. Now, here's an example. Here's what I say. Now, here's an example. I love working with teens. When I was a youth pastor, I had 86 kids in the youth group. There were more kids in the youth group than there are in this church. But we got together, and we'd have an activity. And every time, Jonathan, my 7th grader, 8th grader, 9th grader, when I'd lay out the rules, it's a simple game. Simple game. Okay? Do this, don't do this. Jonathan goes, Jonathan, what's the question? What if? And then he'd give me this. Okay, answer that question. Jonathan, well, what if? 5 minutes later, you're done answering all the what ifs. Finally, everybody's, Jonathan, shut up. Let's play the game. We're just, okay. But you have to, especially when he was a 7th grader, you have to answer the what ifs. And what God is doing for his children, he's helping them get the abstract of holiness down into the real nitty-gritty of life. Leviticus is a very rubber meets the road kind of book, despite all of what seems archaic in all the rules that God gives to him. He's putting training wheels on. He's helping rubber meet the road. He's giving them illustrations because it's really not about the food. It's really not about the sickness. It's really not about the leprosy. It's really not about the skin. It's about the heart, and it's about the relationship. And so he's giving them things that help them to see, oh, I'm supposed to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. Oh, that means I have to hate everything that keeps me away from God and loving him with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. So what God is doing is he's giving them illustrations. As we move into chapter 12, you can just look at the title of the chapter there in your book Bible, if you have a Bible that has chapter headings, Purification After Childbirth. Okay, this is going to be fun. Chapter 12. Now, wait a minute. We're going to be talking about uncleanness, and we're talking about childbirth? The first thing that we have to get our minds around is that when God creates man, he blesses them and says what? Be fruitful and okay. He blesses them and tells them to have kids. Childbirth is a blessing or a curse? Don't ask a brand new mother. Okay. Childbirth is a blessing, right? Childbirth is a blessing. It's not a curse. That's why in the Psalms chapter 127, it says, blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. That's a blessing. It's a good thing. In fact, it was to be cursed if you had no children, no progeny left when you were done. Your name was cut off. There were no children to carry on who you are. So the first thing we need to understand that having children is a blessing. It's not a curse. And again, we're going to talk through this. You're going to have to read it. But in this chapter, three different times, it tells the reason for the defilement. It says, the blood of her purification, the blood of her purification, the blood of her purification. What defiles the woman in the childbirth is the fact of blood. It's a bloody process. The blood itself isn't giving life. It's coming out of the body, not providing life. And it's a part of the process, and this blood is associated with death. The only time that God accepts blood, especially inside the temple precinct, is when that blood is from a clean animal and it's being used in a sacrificial vein. We're going to see that because of her bloody condition, she can't even come into the temple or the tabernacle precinct. But the blood is associated with death. And God, again, is just giving them, even though it's a life-giving process, the blood itself is associated with death, and oftentimes, they didn't have a great Grandview Hospital out there in the wilderness. They didn't have Penn University. They didn't have CHOP. Oftentimes, in the process of giving birth to a child, a mother would bleed to death. A child would die in childbirth. The whole process of giving birth, of bringing life into the world, was a life and death scenario. The blood in this process is associated with death. As unclean, the woman is also contagious. Not just her, anything. Anything that's unclean is contagious. And so he's going to drill down on that just a little bit. For 7 days, if it's a boy. If it's a girl, it's going to be for 14 days. She's unclean. Now, wait a minute. That's not very fair. You always knew boys were cleaner than girls, right? Why? What's going on there? Again, why? We don't know. It doesn't say. Here's one thing we can say, though. It's not because guys are cleaner and girls are dirtier. There's been some thought that perhaps because the girls would menstruate later in life, there was an uncleanness associated with that. I don't think that's what's going on. Understand this. In this whole process of determining what's clean and unclean, what defiles more and what defiles less, the things that defile more are the things that are more valuable. When God curses the ground and the snake and makes a distinction between the serpent and the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman, he says that he will bring forth, he will put a distinction between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the whom? The seed of the woman. It's going to be through the seed of the woman that redemption comes. And as we're talking about that which is unclean, the guys are just regular. They're just regular unclean. But the one on whom their hope is set is the woman. The woman who's going to bring forth a seed, who's going to bring forth a son. And so it may actually be that the longer cleansing period is because of the greater value of the woman that was brought into the world, who may in fact be the one who brings forth the Messiah, but it yet still needs to go through the purification process. It moves just a little bit farther down in chapter 12, and it talks about after these 7 days or 14 days, based on boy or girl, she's not unclean, she's only unclean and contagious for those that week or 2 weeks, but she's not yet holy. So if it's a boy, again, now we need to understand these two categories. There's holy, and the opposite of holy is unholy. And that's different from what's clean and unclean. Something that's not holy can still be clean. But anything that's holy cannot be unclean. These two categories can never, ever, 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 ever touch. That's the point. When she is in her uncleanness, we're going to see that she cannot touch what is holy. Now, she's moved from unclean to clean, but she hasn't yet moved into this realm. For 33 days if it's a boy, for 66 days if it's a girl. So because she's not moved into that holy realm, she's not able to touch holy things. It says that for us down in verse 4. She shall not touch anything holy, nor shall she come into the holy place, the sanctuary. So she's not yet clean, but she's not defiling and dirty at this point. So there's some period of days she goes through, and eventually she's sanctified. She's made clean, the text says at the very end. The priest shall make atonement for her, and she shall be clean, and as clean, she can now enter into the holy place. She can now touch the holy things. There is a sense of holiness in that she's one of the holy people again. She's brought into the holiness of the community and can partake of the holy things. Not a priest. She can't go into the holy place and offer sacrifices, but she can do the priestly work of being a representative of God in all she says and does. That's chapter 12. At the very end, there's a provision for poverty. If you can't bring the lambs that are required for the sacrifice, then bring some doves. But the sanctification, the cleansing, always comes through sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. whatever happens in these four chapters, talking clean, unclean, whenever there's unclean, 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 there's always washing, and usually there's sacrifice. That's always how it works. Chapters 13 and 14, leprosy laws. And I'll tell you what, these are long chapters. Okay. Leprosy. Now understand, when we think of leprosy, we think of something that eats the skin, body parts dropping off, and that is leprosy. But leprosy is a word that can mean many, many, many different things. It can be anything from acne to a boil to a burn to a festering of stuff. It can be raw flesh. And so there's also, it could be psoriasis. It could be just dry scalp disease. It could be eczema. All of these different things fall under this title of leprosy. But leprosy is a skin condition that is evidenced visibly. So there's going to be something wrong, and you're going to be able to see it. He moves into chapter 13 and starts talking about these things. It includes all types, whether they're common or whether they're severe. So in verse 2, he starts talking about a swelling, an eruption, a spot. And this is where your skin starts to crawl. It gets just a little bit graphic. Okay, what color is the hair growing out of that spot? Is there raw flesh there? Is it oozing? My seventh grade guys are like, yeah, this is really cool. It's like, you don't want to eat this, read this before breakfast. In verse 18, he talks about a boil. In verse 24, he talks about a burn. Down in verse 29, 31, he talks about an itch, a spot on the head or on the face that crawls down into the beard. He talks about spots. Are they pink? Are they white? Are they red? Are they purple? What's going on there? He talks about baldness. There was one of the commentators lived in Moorhead, North Carolina. He said, bald jokes are all the rage down here. Moorhead, get it? Baldness. So all of these things he works through, and he defines leprosy, the state of being leprous, as unclean. And again, anything that's unclean makes unclean. It's contagious. But what determines if it's unclean? So there has to be an official who can recognize, who can know, who can say yes, no. You had to go to a priest. He says first Aaron or any of Aaron's sons, and he must, over and over again in the text, he must examine. He's got to look, he's got to check, he's got to discern. And then he's got to make a pronouncement. Pronounce him clean. Pronounce him unclean. Pronounce him unclean. And in the pronouncement of the priest, he's passing the judgment, not of just a priest, but he's passing the judgment of God. There has to be this official who does that. It's determined by the priest. There includes periods of quarantine. Is it dirty? There's something there, but I don't know which direction it's going. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? We're going to set it aside for 7 days. Come back and check. You know, I don't know. 7 more days. Come back. Oh, it's definitely getting better. Okay, it's clean. You go ahead. Wash. Uh-oh, this one's getting worse. This is unclean. You are unclean. Pack your bags. It's time to start moving. It results in a removal from the community. Look down in verses 45 and 46 of chapter 13. The leprous person who has the disease shall wear clothes that are torn. They will let the hair of their head hang loose. They shall cover their upper lip and cry out, unclean! Unclean! He shall remain unclean as long as he has disease. Now get these, let these sink in. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling place shall be outside of the holy people. Can you get that? Can you understand that? God is giving his people something that's tangible, something that's visible, something that they're afraid of, something they're learning to detest, something that will suck the very life out of who they are. And it becomes their label. It becomes their identity. Unclean, me, I am unclean, me, that's me. The whole purpose of God giving this is so that his people understand he wants them to be holy. I'm holy. In everything I do, I'm set apart for this holy God. And so he's giving them this picture. You are unclean. And unclean can't be close to God. And it's not just the holy ones on the inside who get to be free from leprosy. He lets it fall to some people who later on in the New Testament, they get saved and they're drawn into fellowship. But he's giving them a picture. He's giving them a picture at this point. There's a provision for cleansing from leprosy. But nowhere in either of these two chapters, chapter 13 or chapter 14, is there medicine that's issued. Come to the priest and he will make you better. You can look as much as you want. That never, ever, ever happens. The provision that's in there is this. If God miraculously intervenes in your life, halting the decay, halting the leprosy, halting the death in your life, then there's provision for you to be clean. And you work through the process. It involves washing. It involves not just sacrifice, but sacrifices. Sin sacrifice, guilt sacrifice, burnt offering, grain sacrifice, tribute offering. More than one. And then it involves anointing. And again, it's going to be the blood from the sacrifice applied, just like to a priest, to the right earlobe, to the right thumb, and the right big toe. And then the oil, again, applied to the right earlobe, the right thumb, and the right big toe. And the idea is he's cleansed so that he can hear, he can do, and he can go and perform, walk in the ways of his God. And then he's commissioned to do it by that holy anointing oil, just like the priests. And he's brought back into the realm, not of the unclean, but of the, not even just the clean, the realm of the holy. Can you wrap your mind around that for a minute? At one point, they're cast out of the camp. They can't be with anybody because to be with anybody would make that person unclean. And so they have to run around and say, don't come near me. Me, I'm the problem. I'm unclean. But when God touches them and reverses that curse, they can wash. They can offer the sacrifices. They can be anointed. And they're welcomed back not just into the realm of the clean, but the realm of the holy. That is an awesome picture. It's our picture. He moves forward in chapter 13 and he starts to talk about woven materials or garments. In chapter 14, he's going to talk about houses that are theirs in the land in which they are going. But leprosy then is the idea of not just a skin disease, but any external condition of decay. It's called rot in verse 55. It's the rot. God is wanting to get them to wrap their minds around what uncleanness is. It's rot. What is unholiness in the camp? It's rot. What is sin in my life? It's rot. Now stop and ask yourself a question. How seriously do you consider sin? And how big a problem is it in your life? We kind of have not the Catholic idea of medial and mortal and venial sins. But we kind of have the idea of, you know, white-collar sins, a little white lie. You know, that really doesn't make me that dirty. It's just kind of a common. God says, listen, I want you to understand something. When you let sin in your life, like Cain, be careful. Sin is just around the corner, and it's crouching like an animal ready to devour you. There's rot in your life when you toy with sin. You ever toy with sin? You ever flirt with sin? Yeah, we do. God says, listen, I want you to understand the nature of uncleanness, of sin. It is a rotting disease that's always hungry for more. You've heard the little phrase, sin will take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you wanted to stay, and cost you more than you're willing to pay. That's what sin is. And God is giving them picture after picture after picture to understand the rot of sin in their life. He gives it with regard to garments. It's extended to garments in 13, houses in 14. They are defined as unclean. Therefore, they are contagious. Whoever wears a rotting garment becomes rotten. Whoever steps or eats inside a rotting house becomes rotten, is the idea. Again, it's determined by the priest, examined, pronounced, includes isolation and periods of quarantine, setting apart, scraping, sometimes cutting out, see if it stops the spread, results in removal from the community. Sometimes by fire, that is a garment, and sometimes by disposal, a house. Take all these building blocks and all of the stuff that goes with it and dump it in a place that's unclean outside the camp. Garments, burn them up. They're good for nothing. There is a provision for cleansing. It involves washing, sacrificing, and anointing. Holy people will live in this dwelling. People that are called the priesthood of God in Exodus chapter 19, verse 5. People that are the segola, the holy ones and precious to God. So make sure that this is clean. Then we come to chapter 15. What a joyous chapter. Moms and dads, you ever remember when you had the talk with your kids? You had to explain to them the facts of life? So you read through this and you can't get around it. It talks about semen, menstruation, blood. Say, okay, yep, thank you. Now listen, we understand that God made these things the way they work. When God deals with this, he doesn't deal with it in a gory fashion. He doesn't talk about these things to excite us about things inappropriately. But he doesn't ignore them. I hope as parents that you're able to talk with your kids about sex, about reproduction, about all the things that, because if you're not talking to them about it, guess what? Somebody else is. So better to have mom and dad talk to them about it. And God talks to us about some of this stuff. Now, we might not exactly like all that he says about it. Because everything, but everything in chapter 15 is sexual in nature. It deals with reproductive organs in particular. If you read the first part, it talks about a discharge. And the way it's using it is primarily of the reproductive organs. Now here's the format of the text. It starts out with a chronic discharge. That is a problem that's big, deep, long. Okay? He talks about it first, a chronic problem in the male. Then he talks about a normal emission. It's not sinful. It's not sinful, it's just one of those normal things that happens. And then it goes on in verse 18 and it talks about sexual intercourse itself. But that which comes forth from the inside of a man brings uncleanness. We'll get to that as we wrap things up. The normal emission of a woman on a monthly cycle defiles and makes dirty others and herself and anything she sits on. And then it moves into a chronic discharge with the female. So it's chronic, normal, chronic, boys, girls, and it moves forward. Now, the whole point is, if it's unclean, it's contagious. If it's unclean in itself, it makes other things unclean. It extends to everything they touch. So somebody who's unclean and sits on a chair, you can't touch that chair. Well, how do you know if you can't touch that chair? You go to sit down on it. What does that person have to say? Hey, don't sit on that chair. Why? Why can't I sit on the chair? I'm unclean. Really? A couch. If you touch a bowl, if it's a porcelain bowl, they have to break it. If it's a wooden bowl, they have to wash it. They can't use it again till night. Everything they touch becomes unclean. Their status lasts until evening, especially in the normal. It lasts as long as the condition remains. We come up to the New Testament, and there's a lady who has an issue of blood for how long? 12 years, right? 12 years. Not only is she unclean, but anything she touches becomes unclean, and nobody can touch what she touches, lest they become unclean. Now, there is a provision for cleansing. Again, it involves washing for the normal. It involves sacrifice for the chronic. Whew. All right. We got through the stuff. Let's take 10 minutes and just kind of debrief here, okay? All of these pictures, boy parts, girl parts, birthing process, the warp, which is the up and down threads, the woof, which is the crossways, threads and garments, houses, skin diseases, cancers. What in the world is going on with all of this talk? It's good for us to take these all together. For one thing, you don't have to drill down on any one of them for very long. But there's something that God's doing in this Holiness 101 class out in the wilderness for his young people. What he's stressing in his holiness is this. Holiness is not primarily a matter of what you do. Holiness is primarily a matter of what you are. And again and again and again, he's going to try to drill that down into their heads. Holiness is not primarily a matter of what you do. Holiness is a matter of what you are. Not primarily an action, it's a condition. And so God begins in chapter 11 by dealing with appetites. What you love and what you hate reveals what you are. So learn to love what is holy. Learn to hate what is not holy. In fact, learn to hate that which defiles and takes away from holiness. He's talking in chapter 11 about what goes in, what you're feeding on. In chapter 12 and 13 and 14 and 15, he's going to continue by dealing with their condition, not their appetites. He's dealing with what comes out from the inside, because everything that's inside must come out. It will come out. Jesus said, by their fruit you will what? You will know them. All of us are good at putting on a mask and hiding and making ourselves look good, but all of us can only do it for a little while, because eventually, what's on the inside must come out. The point gets extremely personal at the front end of this discussion in chapter 12 and on the back end of this discussion in chapter 15. And again, we're uncomfortable with it because it primarily talks about sexuality. But what God is getting at here is, listen, this is something that you can't run away from. It's deep as deep can go in who you are. And as he talks through this, it's not just a personal problem. It's a personal problem. My condition never just affects me. My condition always affects others. Dad, you know that's true, don't you? When there's sin in your heart, it affects your wife. It affects your kids. It affects your work environment. Moms, wives, you know the same to be true for you, don't you? Your sin never affects just you. It always affects your husband, your kids, your friends, so on and so forth. We see this in a profound way when we come into the promised land, and Achan thinks he's just going to do a little sin, hides it underneath his tent. Who dies with Achan that day? His whole family. Why? Because sin never affects just you. Sin is always a rot that affects others. The focus is on the defiling, destructive, and deadly nature of our condition. Do you really believe that your sin is defiling, destructive, and deadly? No, you don't, or you wouldn't do it. Neither do I. God gives us these pictures to help us to drive home into our heads and our imaginations. Listen, every sin, all of my sin, is defiling, destructive, and deadly. I've got to get my mind around that. But the focus of this isn't on their physical condition. God didn't give these laws to their people so they would be healthy. That wasn't the point. He gave these laws to them so they would be holy. That's the point. Now, is there some good sanitation involved in all this? Absolutely. But that's a byproduct. That's a secondary consideration. The primary purpose of this is so that they would be holy people, not healthy people. When we talk about leprosy, I hesitated to bring these pictures up, and there's worse ones that are out there that we could show. But I want you to see, this is a 24-year-old man. Leprosy ends up eating. It ends up taking the cells of the skin and making them desensitized to any pain. And then eventually it builds calluses and then it starts to eat away. So that what once was beautiful becomes ugly. Ugly. In fact, can you imagine? It's deforming. Genesis 1, let us make man in our what? You know what sin does? Sin takes the beautiful image of God that he built into man, and it makes you ugly. And all that people can see when there's sin in your life is not your God, but you. And what you have to offer when there's sin and cancer and decay in your life is absolutely repulsive. It's distorted. It's ugly. And God says, I want you to learn to think about sin this way. This is what sin does to you. This is what sin does to you. Not physically. Not physically. Morally. Spiritually. Is this the impression you want to give of me to others? As he continues, he wants us to understand that our condition is chronic. It's from the inside out. As David says in Psalm 51, in sin did my mother conceive me. Not that act of sexual reproduction was sinful in and of itself, but from the very moment that David was conceived, he was a what? He was a sinner. Folks, we're not sinners because we sin. We sin because we're sinners. And God, over and over again, whether it's with the woman or the man, he says, listen, man, every time you engage in reproducing yourself, the only thing that you can bring forth is more sin, another sinner, more dirt, more defilement. Wife, every time you bring forth a baby, even if it's a girl, and the seed of the woman is going to bring forth the Messiah one day. But every time you bring forth something, it's from the inside out. It's clean. It's unclean. It's dirty. It's defiled. It's yuck. Because go as deep as you can inside of you. And you'll find, like Paul said, in me that is in my flesh dwelleth what? No good thing. It's chronic, folks. It's from the inside out. Our condition is progressive. In the day that thou eatest of it, thou shalt surely die. Now, they didn't that day. 930 years later. But you know what? It's a progressive degenerative disorder. It's a condition that desensitizes and isolates. It's impossible to do community and sin. It's impossible because sin is always focused on what? Self, self, self. It's impossible to do community in sin, because sin always isolates and desensitizes. The more I do it, the less I feel it. Our condition is hopeless. There is no cure in that culture. They didn't have the medicines that we do today. Their condition was hopeless. Cleansing? Cleansing required personal confession. What's wrong with you? Nothing. What's wrong with your ear? Nothing. What's wrong with your hands? Nothing. Oh, there is two. Let me see it. The only way that there was ever any cleansing was first you had to personally confess that you're, you know what? Even in the New Testament, James says, confess your what? One to another. You know what? None of us do each other any good by pretending that we don't struggle with sin in our lives. And there's really not a sin that you don't struggle with in your life. I've talked to my boys several times. I said, listen, you're not going to struggle with a sin that I haven't struggled with, because I'm made out of the same stuff as you. I'm telling you as your pastor, you're not going to struggle with a sin that I haven't struggled with. Now, maybe I haven't struggled with it in the same manifestation that you struggle with it, but guess what? We're made out of the same type of stuff. And the only way that we can help each other is to confess our faults one to another. Listen, my biggest problem is my sinfulness. It requires, back in chapter 13, that we ourselves say, I'm unclean. I'm unclean. But cleansing requires divine intervention. The only way, the only way I can be cleansed from my sin is if God reaches into my life and does something about it. Cleansing affords renewed fellowship. When I do get saved, I'm brought into a community called a faith community, a covenant community. I get to rub shoulders with others who love God. But here, look at this last one. Cleansing affords renewed responsibility. I get the blood applied to my ear, my fingers, my toes. I get recommissioned as an image bearer of God, so that wherever I go, whatever I do, whatever I say, I'm thinking about God's words. I'm busy doing God's work. I'm walking in the paths that God would have me to go. God is able to take me from all of my sin, all my leprous and isolating and desensitizing disease, and recommission me for His glory. Praise God. But only God can do that in my life. When it comes down to it, here's what we have to understand. The greatest threat to holiness is not what you do, but what you are. And that lies beneath the surface. I ask you this morning, are you afraid of your sin? Do you despise sin in your life? Do you see it as unholy? Do you see it as dangerous? Do you see it as defiling? Do you see it as deadly? Do you see it as a rot? Or do you see it as something you think you can control? Let's pray.